Welcome to Axiom 777. Hey, what's up, AGS? I'm your host, Ken Ham, and welcome to Axiom 777. Today is very exciting, not only because of the show, but because tomorrow the ballot boxes are officially open and you, the people, will finally decide who you want to represent you. Today, we have a few things up on the agenda. First is the news of AGS, of course, and second is an interview with Mr. Nelson Rockefeller. Now, enough with the chit-chat. Let's get in it. Hey, y'all. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you guys on tonight. All right, first things first, Mr. Robert Williams has been appointed to the position of General of the Armies, as well as Field Marshal by President Hayes. A very enviable position as well as monumental. I have a deep feeling that we will be seeing a lot more of General Williams as we approach the reset and the events of 9/11 are not too far into the future. I feel that much of our country's security will rest heavily on his shoulders, and I wish him the best of luck. Another interesting development is that of the Democrats, for as of last night, Mr. Todd Moore stepped down as chairman. This action elevated Ms. Rodriguez into the position. Good or bad? Too early to tell. However, all I believe can be said is that Rodriguez has a lot of work cut out for her. With the responsibility of the Democrats resting on her shoulders, all eyes are intently focused, wondering what will be their future. Also, Election Day is coming up tomorrow and will go on until Saturday. A big day for the candidates and a stressful one at that. With many seats hotly contested, who knows what will happen. Be sure to turn on those post and story notifications from Axiom's main page. That way we can keep you up to date with the elections. Thank you all for tuning in to Axiom 777 and stay tuned for me and Mr. LeMaire's interview with Nelson Rockefeller in just a few moments.
Hello,
Mr. Rockefeller.
How you doing, Mr. Ham?
I'm doing fine. How about yourself?
Doing all right. How you doing, LeMaire?
I'm doing great.
You guys hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you.
All right, great.
Thank you for coming on. My goodness, your voice is much deeper than I anticipated. Hey.
That is because Rockefeller is an actual man.
Oh, okay.
I'm 18, but I've been a man since before then. So,
yeah,
it's not the numbers. It's not the numbers.
Yeah, it's not. It's not the numbers. It's what's down under.
Oh, okay. Right. That took a quick turn.
Yeah, but
go ahead, Lenore.
What actually I think makes men is accepting is like owning up to your mistakes.
True. That was a virtue statement.
Very true.
That was very true. I actually want to just get right into the first question, Rock. How confident are you in the Republicans this year as chairman of the Republican Party?
Midterms are looking very good for us. As you know, we've gone into a couple previous elections with a little bit more wiggle room. But, you know, with the Republican turnout machine, I'm not worried about us holding 90% of our seats. We may lose one or two, but those races are going to be really close, and it could go either way with those one or two races. But, you know, there's a very strong possibility of us holding all seats in Congress in 2082/1998 or 84.
What seats do you think are the really big battlegrounds?
So,
in your opinion,
so the most at-risk seat for Republicans right now is District 11. That's Taylor versus Shields. You know, Shields is a charismatic candidate. He's nice to people. He's gotten some bipartisan support. And him chiseling at Taylor's base in the Republican Party, along with, you know, Shields' former creator tenure, has helped him get both Democrat and Republican support. So he's going into this D11 race pretty strongly. But we're going to be fighting to keep Taylor in the Senate because he's done a great job.
Yeah, Shields is very – I believe Shields was actually in the – he was in the Constitution Party, I think, at one point, although I was gone
at
that time. Yeah. Shields was one of the first reps in the Constitution Party back when I served in the House in 2072.
Yeah, oh, dang. Yeah, I heard he was a pretty sweet guy.
It him, me, and my opponent for D14 House, Anthony Clinton. We were the three bill machines that term, pumping out bills like every 2 days at least, if not every day.
Good. All right. Rock, how confident are you in your own race, actually?
So this isn't the first time I've run against Minato. You know, I would say last time I ran against him in 2080, it was a lot closer. You know, the preliminary polls had me with a lot of space to move around with. I had quite a gap last time, and that's a little more narrow this time around. But you know, Minato's campaigning a lot less this time, and you know, I know who my supporters are, so I'm not really worried about re-election. I think it's just a question of how close it gets, and I think me and him both know that.
What was the story behind the Boyles Amendment, the big amendment that we've all been talking about?
So Boyles Amendment started, well, I'll say the concept for it was birthed back when Richardson was president and I returned. You know,
that was a fun time.
Yeah, it was interesting. We had Richardson and Cromwell pushing a reset. But it was mostly Cromwell as VP pushing it through Congress. I had just returned, you know, there were some things going on I didn't really approve of within the Republican Party. So there's some infighting there. But the reset for me was a big issue because the way the bill was written, it would have passed as a federal law. So it wouldn't have been a constitutional amendment. And it wasn't very thorough. So our reset wouldn't have been structured. It wouldn't have been organized. And to halt that bill, I rallied a bunch of congressmen and public officials to stop that reset bill. And then I proposed the Middle Ground Act of 2077 to kind of keep a compromise option open so that it wouldn't get the reset bill wouldn't get plowed through Congress. So, you know, that kind of killed the reset debate for a while. And people would ask me, they would say, hey, Rockefeller, when is the reset happening? And I would give him the answer. I would say, yeah, I'm writing a massive constitutional amendment that's going to get the reset done. And it's going to get it done better. So, you know, I was busy with school. You know, I was in my first semester. I had some things to do, so I kept putting it off for a little bit. But in December, you know, my time freed up. I was like, you know what, we're going to get this done. I sat down. I started revising the current constitution because there were a lot of things I had a problem with in it. So the way I structured the amendment was to rewrite the current constitution, add things like governor's districts, implement a reset, and then take all of those changes and compile them into a new constitution. So right now, we technically have a new constitution. It just, the revised version hasn't been released yet. That's something I'm going to be working with the Creator Council to release very soon. But all the changes are outlined within the Boyles Amendment. It's a lot. Did that answer your question?
It did. That, yeah, I was impressed to be able to push that. To be able to push that through was amazing to me. I couldn't believe it. And I read through that, and I can't remember who I asked first for the link to the Boyles Amendment. Because, you know, I love law and politics. I love just reading documents. So I was like, all right, let me see this amendment. I was expecting something like a little short little thing. That's who it was. That brother sent me a 23-page. I just looked at it for a second. 27. Yeah, I'm sorry. I sat there and just looked at my phone for another. Oh my gosh, I need to go get some hot chocolate. I need to sit down. Get some popcorn. I know. Could you actually? One question I have: could you explain the governor's districts? You know, because I think a lot of people are kind of confused on that, and even myself. You know, what does it do? What was the point of it? You know, stuff like that.
So, the first thing I'm going to address with governor's districts is how they were spread out into different districts, because, you know, a big complaint with governor's districts is that, you know, it kind of steals the identity of the states. People have a problem with, you know, four different states being clumped together and labeled as a number, you know, kind of how our congressional districts are. And a while ago, Blaine, you know, he proposed a bill to, you know, give districts like actual names, like the People's District of Tradition. That was District 7. You know, we want identity for our states, even when they're grouped together. So when I started looking at potential governor's districts maps, I wanted to preserve regional identity. So after realizing that, you know, I couldn't create, you know, 20 districts with the same number of states, it just wasn't going to be possible. I could have done 25, but 25 is too many districts. I divided them into regional different districts, you know. So we have the Great Basin District, we have the Appalachian District, you know. I took that, and it originally had 14 districts. 14 is a good number. It'll foster competition. It'll keep governors active. And that was in the first version of the Boyle's Amendment. There were no individual states. And I had a discussion with Crawford, Justin Crawford. I don't know if you know him. He's running for House under the Republican Party. He brought up a good point to me. He said, you know, some people just want to run for an individual state. And what me and him agreed upon was that, you know, we should keep a couple individual states. And it really is a good compromise, because we have the big states, which should really be represented by themselves. We have California, Texas, New York, and Florida. All four of those states, their quote governor's district is their state. So, you know, if people don't want to manage a big district, but they still want, you know, an original state, that's where they would go. So we get the competition, we keep the identity, and we get some individual states.
Yeah, I think that was a really good idea. I remember me and a friend of mine, do you know Palpatine?
I do, yeah.
I'm sure. Yeah, yeah.
Who doesn't know about Palpatine?
I know, right? we were talking about governor's districts, and I do believe it will give more competition, because I kind of feel like it's almost like the mayorship, you know, the way it is right now. Because
that's another thing.
Too many.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but, you know, a big thing with governor's districts is I was talking with Shields one night when he was on the Creator Council, and we're like, how are we going to make mayorships more organized, more streamlined, more competitive? And we paired that issue with, you know, how disorganized state legislators are. So this system is going to be a little more confusing to others than actual governor's districts, because you kind of have to, you know, run it through your head a couple times before you can get a grasp of it. But we're going to be taking state legislators or governors, the legislators for governor's districts, and we're going to be, instead of filling them with, you know, first come, first serve for, you know, however many seats the governor wants, what we're going to do is we're going to have the Creator Council take, let's just use California, for example. They're going to take California, and they're going to take a certain number of the biggest cities in that state. We don't know the numbers yet. We're still working on it, but let's say 10. Mm-hmm. So you take the top 10 largest cities in California. You hold elections for those mayorships, and those mayors will compose the legislature of California. And what we did in the amendment is we're letting people with federal jobs hold a mayorship too, so that, you know, even if you're a congressman, you can still, you know, be mayor of your hometown or a small city, because it's not really a demanding job. It's not going to create conflict, and it allows you to participate in states while creating, you know, competition all the way at the bottom.
Dang, I'm smiling over here. Oh my gosh, that's brilliant. That's a brilliant idea.
Thank you. I can't take credit for everything. Boyle's Amendment was a collaborative project, you know. I wrote a lot of it, but there were so many revisions, and you have to give credit to the people who are in the list of authors and revisers. You know, that idea with legislators, you know, me and Shields came up with that together. And, you know, Bloomberg was a huge help in the Supreme Court section, and also, you know, with just the legal language of the amendment. So this is a crowdsourced document. You know, I helped get it started, but by no means this is this is all me, you know.
I have a question about the electoral process changes. Sure.
What's up?
Because I know that not a lot of people. I know that the majority of people that I've talked to only read through like the reset portion.
Yeah.
Of the amendment, and I just want to bring something a little to light that people have seen, and that I noticed because I read the fine print is the fact that that the Chief Justice and the Attorney General are allowed to view the ballots.
Yes.
So where did that idea come about? And with the Chief Justice's prior history with rigging elections, he actually got banned. He actually got a life sentence for it. Do you think that this would be an issue that he could potentially rig elections again, like he did in like he did with the whole 2060 fiasco?
So, this concept of election oversight, you know, came about a couple of years ago. I can't remember what creator we had an issue with, but you know, there's some confusion around election results, and there's no real way to verify it. And you know, Congress had to get involved, and it was just a big mess. And Congress shouldn't be getting involved in verifying election results unless it's the presidential, because then things just get messy, and everyone accuses the elections of partisan influence, and that's just not something we want. So I came up with this idea, and I was saying, you know, who are the independent players, you know, in the government? You know, who is required by law to be independent? And, you know, Attorney General of the Department of Justice and Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. Now, obviously, we didn't throw them the keys to view elections without, you know, considering the contingencies of could they rig it? You know, what would be the consequences of future chief justices and attorney generals potentially having access to these election results? And the safeguards we came up with were they're only permitted to have viewing access. They're not allowed to edit anything. So what I believe they did for the last election was they hooked up a spreadsheet to the survey for elections, and they didn't give the attorney general or the chief justice access to the form. They only give them access to the spreadsheet where they can actually regulate viewing versus editing access. Another thing that we did, you know, to keep things safe was, I mean, hopefully safe because people don't want to get banned, is we included a punishment where, you know, you leak election results, then you get an automatic lifetime ban, because leaking election results is it's more likely to happen than rigging. And that is something we wanted to focus on. We didn't want, you know, chief justices or attorney generals going back to their friends and saying, hey, listen, this, you know, these are the elections results right now. You know, keep getting voters in. This is who has voted and who hasn't. And that's something we wanted to prevent.
That's actually very smart, actually.
Thank you.
Do you know, was it Bloomberg that helped craft the language for this section?
For the electoral?
Yeah.
No, that came from me. Bloomberg, he wasn't involved in the election oversight. I had that idea before I brought him the amendment for revision. Bloomberg was actually a really, really great help with Shapiro for verifying the Creator Council election results. Shapiro was having a little bit of a difficult time due to, you know, personal stuff going on. And he was there. He just, you know, he couldn't do it all himself. And Bloomberg helped root out invalid votes, stuff like that. So it looks like it's working so far. You know, it's been test driven a little bit. We'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, yeah. Only time can tell with this new
right
radical idea.
Actually, one more thing. I want to just go back to the whole city mayor thing. When you said that the mayors will be elected, so
will they kind of be run like elections, so people will compete with each other for the mayorships in the same way as people compete for like representative and stuff like that?
Yeah, so ideally, the same way, so a state before now would post a legislator sign up. And ideally what would happen is on the main page or on the party pages, they post, you know, sign up to run for this mayorship in this election. And every party will nominate their mayors. And if they have an opponent, they do. If they don't, they don't. You know, parties are usually pretty good at filling in the gaps. And then, you know, I get that most mayorships won't be opposed, but you know, we can't really do much about that. But what it will do is, you know, every once in a while, we will get competitive mayorship elections, and that's good. And another thing to note is that the system right now, where anyone can claim any mayorship that isn't occupied, that system wasn't completely, you know, trashed. The mayorships that aren't designated as participating in state legislators, anyone can still claim, you know, any other city. So you don't have to claim, you know, the top 10 largest cities in California to become a mayor in California. You could still become mayor of like Calabasas or something else.
I've a suggestion to make, because I know that this happens in Teapot, is that when like if in those mayorships that aren't constituting the state legislator, shouldn't that be the prerogative of the governor to appoint those mayors?
So right now, you know, with the new system, especially because we're revising how governors are going to be, you know, how they're going to be elected and the role of governors as we're trying to make them more important. Right now, we're going to leave it up to the Creator Council. Hopefully, you know, further Creator Council reform can benefit the elections for all these positions. But yeah, in the future, I definitely think that if we can get responsible governors who are active and, you know, we create safeguards to prevent mayorship election riggings, we should definitely allow governors to appoint mayors and stuff like that. But right now, because we're just transitioning to so much new stuff, especially with the new date, new systems, I think right now it's good that we let the Creator Council handle, you know, how mayorships are dealt out.
Ken, do you have any more questions on the Boyles?
No, actually, I only have two more questions left. Right.
Okay, I'd like to go transition onto the new term after reset. Let's say if you win, you know, you're looking pretty good, but as it turns out, anything can happen on election day. That's one of the things I love about America is that no matter election day, elections are the biggest humbler.
Humbler in America. That's if you lose, right?
Yeah. But still, elections are the biggest humbler if you lose. If right. You think you're going to win and then you lose, it makes people think about who they actually are. So, what's some key legislation, if you can tell us, that you're planning to propose next term?
I have a bunch of projects that I've been working on. The priority right now is I'm working with Speaker Mons and Majority Leader Beasley, and we're taking the House of Representatives rules. And we're totally revamping them. You know, we're taking the good parts from the existing ones. Keep in mind, these were written by Rodham. So, you know, we don't.
Yeah.
They're not exactly the best source for reference. But there's some good pieces that we'll keep from those. We're going to totally rewrite them. We're going to make them very specific so that future houses, you know, we don't have to be in the House of Representatives to make it organized. We can set a legacy of organized rules, you know, very specific procedures so that, hey, we have a question on what we do, go to the House rules. Because the House rules we have right now, you know, the past term, especially with, you know, the procedure for getting the Boyles Amendment through, you know, we had to assemble a conference committee, and there was nothing in the AGS House rules that said, you know, how do we go about getting a conference committee assembled. So we had to refer to real life procedure, and we're going to be including a lot of that in the new rules. So that's going to be the first agenda of the next term. And even if I don't win re-election, I'm looking to assist, you know, my colleagues in the House with that. And I'm going to be looking at, you know, getting a similar version prepared for the Senate too, because, you know, I want both chambers to be equally organized. You know, this is all about Congress. It's not about one chamber or the other.
Dang, y'all are killing it with reform.
I know that I'm real big on legal reform. It's been what I've been working for my entire career here. I know that we've talked about this for a little bit, and you've even hinted about proposing a bill about this. But what do you think about having a tiered court system within?
So,
AGS,
a tiered court system would be great, but we need to establish a higher standard for, you know, legal participation in AGS. You know, me and Bloomberg, we authored the Raise the Bar Act, and, you know, I know me and Lemaire have a little bit of nasty history with that, but, you know, I believe it's a good bill. I
had a lot of shouting arguments just because I had been running the show.
Yeah.
Almost alone for the past IRL year, and I just been used to been running the show, and it's like, hey, hold on, what's going on here?
Right. But my point being is, you know, we've kind of laid the groundwork for a better legal system, and all we need to do is just, you know, we need leaders who will implement it, and I think that just depends on, you know, who's president in 2000, and whether they decide that, you know, legal reform is an agenda they want to pursue.
Dang. What are your? That's all I can say right now. Dang.
You know,
here it is, me and Rocker hammering out of.
Hey,
let's get into the policy side of things.
if you guys want to take a minute, think about another question. I'll go over another thing that I'm looking at, or two more agendas I have for the next House of Representatives. I'm looking at me and Beasley and Monts. We're also looking at bringing committees to the House. You know, back when I was Speaker in the early or late 30s, I fought hard for committees because I wanted a realistic House, and it backfired because AGS wasn't ready. You know,
those were the good days.
Yeah, those were some good days.
Golden ages.
We had a lot of policy debate, but we didn't have a lot of, you know, procedure. We didn't have a lot of people who knew about how government works. But yeah, we've moved on. We've evolved as a simulation and a community. I think we're ready. I mean, the Senate has proved that committees can be efficient if you know, kept to a certain number and utilized the right way. And we're going to be modeling committees off of, you know, how the Senate has implemented them. And then after that, I'll be looking at amending Real Elect with some colleagues because, you know, I think for the Democratic Party, you know, they're gonna be hurting after midterms, and I don't say that to be, you know, prick.
It's
the statistics.
Realistics.
Right. They're gonna be hurting, and you know, I don't want our Democratic Party to die. You know, it's fun, you know, to be chairman of the Republican Party, you know, win all 17 seats and all that. But you know, when you look at the grander scheme of things, you look at TPON and other sims that we compete with, if we don't have competition, we're gonna lose members to them, and we have. If we want our Democratic Party to grow, we need them to shift left on policy, and we need to focus on policy as a simulation for that to happen. You know, we need to fix all of our administrative issues so that we can have a day where those aren't campaigning points. We need to be able to, you know, campaign on healthcare and you know, foreign policy, stuff like that. And I think the original point where I was going with that is speech points are honestly a tumor upon campaigning and policy, because people will, you know, they'll jot down 200 character speeches and they'll be, you know, pardon my language, but they'll be shitty little, you know, anecdotes. And
yeah.
And, you know, if we don't have, you know, numerical value placed on speeches, they'll mean more. They're not going to write a speech, you know, for the most part, if they don't have something to talk about. So you're not going to hear, you know, all the BS spewing to get, you know, points. So that's going to be my third agenda of, you know, the next term.
I have something to add on that. You say that, yes, one of the plus sides is they won't be writing, like, part of my language here, but little pieces of shit of speeches, and they'd be focusing, like, they'd be bigger, but, you know, who's to say that we won't be seeing, who's to say that people won't just stop writing speeches altogether, because speeches would just have no effect.
See, if you had asked me that question, you know, 30, 40 years ago in AGS, I would have said, you know what, that's a risk we're going to have to take. That's a very likely possibility. But, you know, today, as I said before, our simulation has grown a lot. And I think that people who don't campaign, who get out campaigned by their opponents, you know, voters recognize that now. You know, there's a lot of factors surrounding, you know, who people support, but campaigning is definitely one that we've ingrained into the electorate. You know, if you don't campaign, you don't get support from a lot of people. So I don't think we need to, you know, substitute that for people. You know, if they're campaigning, it's a solid campaign. They're giving speeches. People will notice that. They will come and they will, you know, people will be attracted by that. So I just do not agree with, you know, speech points. That's just not something that I'm in support of.
Would this allow for people who, people like myself who don't really write speeches anyway? I campaign by
throwing yourself under the bus there.
Yes, I'm throwing myself under the bus, but you know, I'm also saying, oh, who do I know who does that? Oh, I know myself better than anyone, so I'm using myself as an example. I do a lot of DM person to person campaigning, and I do a lot of live streams. What would be the perks for getting rid of speech points for people who campaign like that?
I mean, obviously people who are more pressed for time or who are, you know, just lazier, they're going to get a little bit of a benefit as opposed to what they had before. But if you're lazy, I mean, like I said before, people are going to notice that. I don't think it's going to make a significant difference in how people perceive your campaign. I just think it's a matter of, you know, in 2068, we had Thaddeus Bot, which for those who don't know what that is, it was
Rodham's bot.
It was a private account. So presidential real elect, you get speech points. And it was a private account made by the Thaddeus campaign where they posted like the maximum number of speeches possible per day on that account. And they were not good speeches. They were just, you know, fluff. And they kept that account on private until like the day before election day, and then they unveiled it, and the Massey campaign got smacked with so many speeches. And that's I love Thaddeus, but that's how his campaign won, because of speech points. You know, I think there are better ways to make our system more realistic, you know, disadvantaging people who, you know, who aren't gonna stoop to the level of empty, meaningless, you know, paragraphs. That's just not, I don't think that's what we should encourage as a simulation.
Yeah. And one thing I wanted to do, especially with like speeches, because I always felt like, at least when I, you know, when I go on AGS and I scroll down and I just see a plethora of speeches during like the campaigning weeks, you know, I get tired.
Yeah.
At some point, you know, I read one complete speech. You know, like for instance, what I wanted to do with like the new year coming in, I wanted to start putting like spots on my show and stuff where people could write like a really good speech and just give them like a section of my show to just kind of just give their speech out on the show so people can listen to it. Cause I really like the idea of audio. You know, I'm a big fan of audio. I think it really would help AGS out a lot if everything, you know, you get to hear the person you're voting for, and
yeah,
you get to hear the, you know, the real people behind the texts and
connect more. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a breath of fresh air, you know, like a splash on the face. Oh my gosh! Okay, so that's
it's human contact.
That's who Rockefeller is. So you know, I think campaigning can be revolutionized in a way. I have a lot of ideas on it, and I think I'm really going to be pushing myself to try to kind of revitalize campaigning in AGS. Yeah.
Well, I'm impressed with what you've done with the station. You've kept it active. You know, you've had some good guests on here. I listened to your podcast last night with the president. And I like what you have going here, so definitely keep it up, you know.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, my good man. I have a question. So what are your plans for the Republicans after the reset as the chairman?
So I will be stepping down from the chairmanship after midterms. So, I mean, I know that rumor is floating around a little bit, but I will be stepping down. I think I mentioned it earlier in the interview, too. I'm going to give some other people, you know, a chance to lead. I'm going to be exploring some new options, and we'll just, you know, the Republican Party has always been strong. It's always been organized. You know, we take care of our own. We welcome new players in. I will be working with the Democrats to help, you know, to help keep them in the loop. I spoke to Moore last night and about some things that we can cooperate on to give the Democrats, you know, give them a little bit of a kickstart.
Oh, I have the latest scoop.
Yeah, Moore stepped down. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, Moore stepped down and Rodriguez is the new chair.
Yeah.
I'm on the DNC board as an advisor.
Yeah, so that was announced. I'm gonna be speaking to Rodriguez later tonight. So I'll be reaching out to her about some things that we can work on together, you know, because we don't want, like I said, we don't want the Democrats to die. We want competition, you know.
You mentioned something like Tapon, you know, the Tapon House was so decided that who won majority was decided by the independent Leibowitz.
Yeah.
Which is something that I would like to have.
Yeah.
It's something I'd like to have in AGS to where, you know, yes, maybe one term, one party might win a vast majority, but you know, the next term it might be neck and neck coming down to one particular race.
Right. And the only thing that comes down to is leadership. It doesn't matter how much recruiting we do, because we can recruit as many left wingers as we want, but if the Democrats don't have, you know, solid leadership that is prepared to take these new players in and set them up for, you know, promising careers in our simulation, then that recruiting is all gone to waste.
I remember there was a Democrat. It was Gabbard. I don't know who Gabbard is called now.
Durant.
I can't remember. Durant. There you go. I'm remembering the CP days. All I remember is Gabbard. But anyway, Durant said at one point that he was talking to Manato, I believe, and he was saying that, you know, it doesn't matter how many you recruit. You know, you need a leadership in the Democrats. Like, I think that's a very valid point. You know, each party that sort of that kind of became big, like the Libertarians, I remember, you know, they had just really good leadership. Republicans,
we had people,
I remember,
like Rex Massey and
chairman.
Baker.
Yeah,
right.
I mean,
Libertarians,
just really good leaders. And
right.
As much the Democrats, they need left wingers. They really do, because right now the Democrats still have a whole lot of rights and central rights. And it's just, it's not really, you're not going to compete when everyone agrees on the exact same.
Right.
Because it just becomes a popularity contest.
It's
a popularity contest now. So
right.
you're not really voting based upon
policy.
Ideal. Yeah, you're not voting on policy because everyone agrees. So now it's okay. Either that person's been here for a week or that person's been here for, you know, 2 years and we all know who he is. So we'll just vote for him.
Right.
So it's kind of just how it becomes.
Another big thing is it's not just about leadership, because, you know, we can have a leader here in the party for, you know, 4 years. And that's what a lot of people think, you know, they think, you know, as soon as, you know, I'm gone, the Republican Party is going to, you know, fall down by the wayside a little bit. And it's happened, but it's about setting up a system of leadership. You want a system that can train the next leaders, you know, allow the new players to step in, take responsibility, and cycle out the older players who, you know, gradually, you know, cede their responsibility. Because, you know, the Libertarian Party died, the CP died because they were parties based around, you know, individuals. You want it based on a system. And that's why the Republican Party has been so successful. Because I could leave tomorrow, you know, my account could get taken down, or I could die tomorrow. The Republican Party would be fine, you know. Next in line must step up. We have a process. And the party, you know, we have faith in, you know, in our party.
That's true. Yeah, system is much more preferred. And I do pretty kind of agree with you there with the whole individual is the reason why they fell apart, because it would be kind of people put all their faith in kind of inside one of put all their faith inside of one person rather than, you know, believing in that one person, but then still being able to function in the system. And, you know, if it's like kind of like a kingdom, you know, the king falls, the whole, you know, Rome goes into chaos, right? Sort of idea.
Exactly.
So my last question for you tonight is, what is your opinion on President Hayes? Because, I mean, after Cromwell resigned very abruptly, he has implemented a few new policy changes, stuff like that. I just ask you, like, what's your opinion on him and the vice president?
Well, right now, I see him as a transition president. I don't think he's made a name for himself yet. And I don't really have an opinion on his presidency right now. I really approve of Donald. He's done a great job in the Senate, and he's done what he can, what he is able to help out here and there, not just with the administration, but, you know, as I said, the Senate and also, you know, the Republican Party. But as far as Daniel's administration goes, we're going to have to wait and see what he offers us.
On the topic of on approval of President Hayes, you know, what about President Cromwell resigned not even a week ago? Well, what is your opinion on him? Well, what do you think his administration contributed to this country?
So I have mixed feelings on Cromwell. You know, when I returned while Richardson was president, me and him, you know, we had quite the rivalry. He was the attack dog. You know, I was the opposition. But then when he stepped up to the presidency after Richardson resigned, we saw him take a different mantle, and he became more cooperative. He was really, you know, he was really willing to work with people. And then I would say towards the end of his presidency, you know, he got tired of people. You know, he was getting pissed off. I think, you know, some real life commitments, you know, had some effect there, and he just kind of gave up, and that's when he resigned. I considered Cromwell, you know, a friend, you know, personally, I still talk to him. I considered him an ally. I tried to help him the best I could in his presidency. I made sure that, you know, impeachment proceedings didn't go anywhere because there were no constitutional grounds. Despite a lot of, you know, pushback in the Republican Party leadership for that. I did have some complaints, though. You know, I wasn't happy with how he carried himself in the end. You know, he didn't do the office of the presidency justice in the end. You know, he tried to take on a more Trump-like persona. And if he wasn't experienced in what he was doing, I wouldn't have as much of a problem, but he knew better. And that was my issue. Another issue I had was his beef with McCain and other Republicans was just, it was inexcusable. There's no reason for it. McCain is a very good friend of mine, and I can't look beyond that. Other than that, you know, Cromwell, he'll probably be known as the president of pardons, the president who didn't care.
Oh yeah.
Who didn't care about the status quo. But yeah, long story short, mixed feelings about him, but personally, good friend of mine.
Wow. Well, I thank you, Richardson, for, I'm sorry, did I call you Richardson?
Yeah, you did call him Richardson.
There's too many names flying around tonight. I'm sorry. Okay.
God damn it. The third Richardson alt.
No.
You've blown my cover.
Oh, no. It's actually the fourth Richardson alt, because Richardson's my alt, guys.
Well, thank you, Rockefeller, for coming on tonight. It was a joy being able to interview you.
Anytime, man.
Thank you for all you've done for the simulation. I mean, you and Shields and everyone else who did the Boyle's Amendment, just thank y'all, because, whew. I swear, y'all, I'm about to go to bed tonight, and I probably will reread the point.
You'll probably learn a couple new things too about it as you're reading it.
That's it. Good, man. I am impressed. Thank you very much for coming on, Axiom.
No problem.
I'd like to thank you both. Ken, I'd like to thank you for allowing me to be your co-host for tonight. It was no great problem. getting to discuss policy. Nelson, thanks for everything. You were an excellent president, and it was a pleasure working with you during your term, and also on the Middle Ground Act, we worked to get some court cases and some laws that were instrumental toward this in right. trying to make sure that they are kept. Thank you for everything you've done.
Thank you, Lamar.
For this country. Today's a very special day because it's AGS's third birthday, and mm-hmm. I believe that AGS could very well be here for another 3 more years, and what we do now will have a great impact. What we do now is how we will be remembered 3 right. years down the road.
All right. Thank you very much, Lamar. Thanks, guys, for having me tonight.
No problem.
Thank you, Rafa.
Hey, y'all. Hope you enjoyed today's episode of Axiom 777, and I pray you will make your way down here Sunday evening for post-midterm news and more interviews. I also encourage you to get out and vote tomorrow. You can't expect change if you don't do your part. Thank you for tuning in to Axiom 7, and I pray you have a blessed rest of the night. Once again, I'm your host, Ken Ham. See you all Sunday.